This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Writer Edith Perlman has become an overnight sensation, but it took half a century. Her most recent collection, Binocular Vision, was a finalist for nearly every big American book prize this year. It won the National Book Critics Circle Award. She's been praised on the front page of the New York Times Book Review. The Jewish Week called her the Bard of Brookline. But Binocular Vision is her fourth book. She has published more than 250 short stories, been anthologized in the Best American Short Stories many times. So why has she remained so relatively unknown until now? That's the question writer Ann Patchett wonders aloud in her introduction to Binocular Vision. The answer may have something to do with Edith Perlman's own desire to stay in the shadows. She says it's important for a writer to go unnoticed. One place Edith Perlman has always been a rock star is the offices of Lookout Books in Wilmington, North Carolina. Founders Ben George and Emily Smith have been fans of Edith Perlman for years. They wanted Binocular Vision to be their debut publication. The book's success has made Lookout a true overnight sensation, and I'm pleased to have writer Edith Perlman and publisher Emily Smith with me in the studio today. Welcome to both of you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
So, Edith, what's this business about writers should go unnoticed? What do you mean?
Well, I think it was Yeats who said that the writer should be the plain girl in the corner of the party who looks at people but doesn't say anything. That's kind of the function of the writer, not only in Ireland, and I see it as my function.
What about the looking, the observing? I mean, in that sense, you're not. Not so alien from your subject. You have to be empathetic with your characters.
Yes, yes, you do have to be empathetic. You look and you feel, but you don't have to sing your own praises.
Mm-hmm. But why has it taken so long? Because clearly critics have been singing your praises for a long time.
I don't know why it's taken so long, but in fact, I think that I have always had a small but passionate following. Mm. And I've never felt neglected.
You started writing in college, and I read that you weren't really planning to be a writer at that time.
I didn't know what I was going to be, but I did know I had to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into computer programming.
That's a good idea, because the writing part of it could be pretty scary for most of us. What was it that made you, or when did you decide that you were going to be a writer?
I had always thought of it as a possible career. And when I got married and there was someone else to bring in the bacon, I went to my typewriter.
And said, I can do this. Did you really support yourself in part for a time on your earnings from a quiz show?
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that. What was the show and what was the big answer? Yeah.
The show was called Tic-Tac-Doe, and it was kind of a little sister of 21, the show that Charles Van Doren was disgraced on. This was a much smaller show. It wasn't possible to be disgraced because they weren't giving out any answers. I did make $700 in a couple of nights, and in those days, $700 was enough to live on for 6 months, so I did.
Oh, that's pretty good. So you write short fiction. You've been included in the company of masters of the form, Alice Munro, William Trevor. So many writers see short stories as a stepping stone to the novel. Well, how do you see the short story?
I see the short story as a genre itself, not a stepping stone to the novel, but a sister to the novel. Some of the techniques are the same, but some are different.
Emily, how much is the publishing world, do you think, takes the blame in some ways for the abandonment of the short story, if it has been, or for, say, casting aside the short story?
I think Edith and I have talked a bit about reading and approach to the short story. I'm not sure that it's the responsibility of the industry. I do think that market concerns are part of it, that when we're reading short stories, we have to pay attention. Deep attention in a way that we don't with a novel, perhaps, that you can afford to drift a bit when reading a novel. And with a short story, you don't pay attention for a sentence or two, and you miss something really essential, especially in an Edith Perlman story.
Interesting observation, because you would think with our shrinking attention spans, the short story would be more exciting than the novel these days. But what you're saying is if you're writing it well, you can't drift for a second. And so So that means the craft of the short writer, the short story writer, the talent is it fundamentally different than a novel writer? Are you a fundamentally different person when you apply your talent to a writer?
I don't know, because I have never written a novel. But certainly there are people who do both successfully. I love the short story because you do have to pay so much attention when you read it and when you write it, and it has to be concise, and every word has to count. I enjoy making all that happen.
How does it work for you when you write a short story? Do you write long and edit down, boil it down?
Yes. That's what I do.
And so you've gotten good then, I suppose, to sort of noticing where, because the first draft of that, a little bit longer, it all makes sense. It hangs together. The plot is still working. And you think, oh, this part has to go.
Yes. There's a lot of squeezing, a lot of compression, a lot of changing an adverb and a verb into one strong verb, never using two adjectives. They sort of lean against each other like drunks, and better to have one strong standing up adjective.
Let's talk a little bit about Lookout, too. It's a new publishing firm, yet you went to Edith's collection of short stories for your premiere volume.
Indeed.
Edith has been around for a while. You're sort of the new kids on the block. What drew you to Edith?
We are. Well, part of our mission is that we're seeking debut and historically underrepresented authors, as well as overlooked gems by established writers. When Ben George, my co-founder, came to Wilmington, we had this idea for a new literary imprint to be a haven for books that we felt mattered. And as we've already discussed, Edith has been writing exquisite stories for years and has a long and passionate, as she says, following. But our goal was to widen that audience, to really try to bring in new readers and make them aware of her stories. The first task in that was going to Ann Patchett, who was eager to write the introduction and has been a champion of Edith's, including her in Best American Short Stories, and has continued to be a champion for Edith along the way. And I think that's one way we've brought in new readers for her.
Well, that's one way. What are some of the other ways? On the hunch that Edith and her other publishers have been interested in some of those same things.
Indeed.
What else do you do?
Well, the first way was to do a new and selected story collection. So we're three previous award-winning collections we're selecting and ordering stories, also including new and stories that were previously not anthologized. So that was part of it. I think that one of the exciting things about being a small or boutique press now, dedicated, thoughtful marketing plans, being very careful about how we use resources. Our books are as beautiful to hold, I hope, as they are to read. So giving them the thoughtful, appropriate packaging, that they have French flaps and that they are, as I said, beautiful.
Another interesting thought, because, you know, these days we're sort of worried about what the digital world is going to do to writing and to publishing. But the fact that we see, even in the music industry, people are going back to vinyl, that the artifact is becoming important again in the presentation of art.
Absolutely. It's important that we select the right typeface. I even think about a digital reader and that you can choose your own font for that. Studies have shown that students retain information better when they're reading from a physical book than from an e-reader. And part of that's they can remember, oh, that section was on the top right of the page, or that was on the left. A digital reader doesn't even really have a recto or a verso, a right and a left. You know, it's just swipe to the next page.
Edith, do you prefer reading short stories to other kinds of fiction?
No, I love to read novels as well. I think I like both equally. I'd like to sink into a novel for months or for weeks anyway, and I like to read a short story intensely in an afternoon.
Who are the writers you admire most?
Dickens is my favorite writer of all time.
He didn't write short.
No, he didn't write short. But I can sink into his novels very happily. For short stories, I love John Updike. I miss him. There's a short story writer I would like to mention because she is neglected so much. Her name is Sylvia Townsend Warner, and she's been dead for about 20 years. But she wrote some of the best short stories of the 20th century, and yet is now forgotten.
So. We hope to see her published through Lookout Press pretty soon. Yeah. But Edith, can I ask you to read for us from
Certainly.
Binocular Vision?
Certainly. I will read from a story in Binocular Vision called If Love Were All. It takes place in World War II London and tells of the efforts of an agency to rescue European children from the Nazis. The children came, wave after wave of them. Polish children, Austrian children, Hungarian children, German children. Some came like parcels bought from the governments that withheld passports from their parents. These children wore coats and each carried a satchel. Some came in unruly bands, having lived like squirrels in the mountains or like rats by the rivers. Some came escorted by social workers who couldn't wait to get rid of them. Few understood English. Some knew only Yiddish. Some had infectious diseases. Some seemed feeble-minded, but it turned out that they had only been temporarily enfeebled by hardship. Mrs. Levenger, the director of the agency, welcomed them in French. They were being sent to villages in the Cotswolds, she said. Hills, she elaborated. They could keep their belongings. Siblings would not be separated. The host families would not be Jewish, but they would be sympathetic. I am not Jewish either, said a dark boy. Ah, Pierre, reproved a bigger boy. It's all right in this place. They slept for a night or two in a seedy hotel near Waterloo Station. Sonia and Mrs. Levenger stayed in the hotel too, intending to sleep. They were always tired, for the bombing had begun. But the women failed to sleep, for the children, not crying, they rarely cried, wandered through the halls or hid in the closets, smoking cigarettes, or went up and down the lift. The next day, or the next day but one, Sonia and Mrs. Levenger escorted them to their quarters in the countryside and deposited them with stout farm families, these Viennese who had never seen a cow, or left them in hastily assembled orphanages staffed with elderly schoolteachers, these Berliners who had known only the tender hands of nursemaids, or stashed them in a bishop's palace, these Polish children for whom Christians were the devil. The Viennese kids might have found the palace suitable. The Hungarians would have formed a vigorous troop within the orphanage. The little Poles, familiar with chickens, might have become comfortable on the farms. But the billets rarely matched the children. The organization took what it could get.
Edith Perlman reading from a story called If Love Were All from her latest collection, Binocular Vision, published by Lookout Press. Edith's going to be reading at Quail Ridge Books today at 3 and then again at The Regulator in Durham at 7 o'clock, but she's here on this program now. Your characters have been called mischievous, meddlesome. Well, first of all, is that a fair characterization?
Some are, yes.
Are you attracted to a certain kind of character when you write?
Yes, I am. A certain few kinds of characters. I like the lonely. I like the solitary. I like the celibate. I also like the mischievous and the meddlesome.
Has that changed over time, your attraction to that kind of character? Kind of characters?
I don't think so. They've always been odd.
And your stories are famous for their amazing twists along the way. And they're great, but do you sometimes feel, you know, enslaved to that? Like, uh-oh, my readers expect the twist. I got to put a twist in this one.
No, I don't.
You just love doing that.
Yes.
Does that come to you? I mean, happen along the way, or do you begin with the twist and sort of write the story around it?
The twist usually comes within the story, that is to say, when I'm writing the story, when I'm revising it.
So that's fascinating to me, because then every time you sit down to write a new story, you have to trust that that's going to happen with this one the way it did the last time.
Yes, but the twist is often something rather small. So I accept that. It doesn't have to be an O. Henry twist.
All right. Lookout is at housed at UNC Wilmington. Tell us about that relationship and the decision to be there.
Sure. We have an entity called the Publishing Laboratory, and it is an opportunity for our master's and bachelor's in fine arts students, they're all writing students, to learn a little bit about the other side, to understand the publishing process, and if not to go into publishing, to appreciate everything that goes into editing, designing, marketing, promotion, and sales of books. So the Publishing Laboratory has since 2001 been publishing titles under its own name. We also have published two literary journals, Ecotone, Reimagining Place. Ben George is the editor and David Gessner, its editor-in-chief. And we were, in its first couple of years, managing to have stories reprinted in Best American Essays, Best American Short Stories, Poetry, Travel Writing, Science and Nature, and wondered how we can bridge the gap between those two things. We have in-house design and production capabilities, desktop publishing facility in the publishing laboratory, students who are eager to learn, and we have these award-winning writers in Ecotone. Edith has published several times in Ecotone now. So that's how we came up with the idea for Lookout. And so far, thanks to her, has been an early success.
Well, it sounds like a great idea, too, the idea that when you write, you really should understand something about the business plan of publishing.
Indeed. We're talking about the intersection of commerce and culture.
Yeah. And I know, I wondered, Edith, if you think that for too long that's been left out of the equation as kind of the dark side, that we as artists really don't want to, you know, sort of get involved with that part of it. And that may have, in a sense, that bifurcation may have hurt the publishing industry artists who feel like, don't tell me about being published. Don't tell me about being popular. I don't need that.
It may have. It's wonderful to be part of a press that involves the writer, too. It involves the writer and the students. We are all quite a happy family.
So I have to ask the two of you, now that you're here, the fact that there's no Pulitzer Prize in fiction this year, what does that mean?
It mystifies me. Certainly very talented people chose among 341 books, three books to offer to the board, and the board turned them down. Don't know what happened.
Well, I tell you what, Ann Patchett's so concerned that she offered your name and said, for goodness sake, why didn't you consider? And I guess that's part of the complaint, is that those three books and even the larger pool from which they came, you know, a lot of people who read an awful lot wonder where those three books came from.
Well, I know that, you know, Ann says in her op-ed in The Times that people will figure it was a bum year for fiction. And we here at Lookout and publishers across the country know better, that it was a terrific year for fiction. And I also love that Ann says of the Academy Awards, it's not really about choosing a best film. It's about generating excitement for going to the movies. So that's what we all want to do for books. And we all know that those medallions and the conversation about the Pulitzer winner takes people to bookstores and reminds them about the joys of reading.
What do you think about the whole concept of awards and prizes? You've won many in your life, been awarded several for your books or your fiction. How do you feel about awards in fiction?
Well, they are a lot of fun to get. They do increase readership. I see nothing wrong with them, and I think it's too bad that the Pulitzer sort of dropped out of the picture.
Yeah, well, next year we expect to see your name on the list. And I thank you both so much for being on the program today.
Thank you for having us.
The co-founder of Lookout Books is Emily Smith. She is executive director of Lookout. It is part of the publishing laboratory at UNC Wilmington. Edith Perlman is the author, most recently, of the award-winning short story collection Binocular Vision. She reads at Quail Ridge Books today at 3 and the Regulator Bookshop in Durham tonight at 7 o'clock, sponsored by the Hinge Literary Center. And for more information about Edith, go to edithperlman.com. You spell Perlman, P-E-A-R-L-M-A-N. Coming up, the history of soul music in the Bull City. Please stay tuned.